Of the many who ate and laughed and slept here, only my sister and I remain. A little over 10 years old when she was born in 1946, I was fascinated by this newborn. I also was afraid. Nancy was the first baby I'd been around. "Be nice to your sister," my father would regularly admonish. "Don't raise your voice." I didn't know then about my mother's miscarriage, that Nancy was the child my parents thought they'd never have. There were perks, I soon discovered, to having a younger sister. Nancy brought variety and vibrancy to my life, and I liked helping her learn to bike and roller skate. I also enjoyed occasionally flaunting my elder status, demanding my preferred seat in the family Buick. When Nancy was 7, I fled for college. But as she entered high school, we grew close. As adults, we were confidants. However, as the events of settling Dad's estate unfolded, I saw these bonds unraveling. The final showdown between my sister and me occurred in Edgemont in December, 6 months after Daddy's death. Hoping to reconcile with Nancy, I suggested that we appoint a third party as administrator and that we step down. "Otherwise," I said, "we'll be speaking only through lawyers." After much discussion, deciding that our relationship was too important to further jeopardize, we agreed. We would ask a third person to take over, or so I thought. At dinner that night, Nancy vowed the opposite. "I have no intention of ever stepping down," she said. "I can't believe you fell for it." "And what about our relationship?" I asked. I don't recall an answer. It's December 20th, 1994. Had my father been alive, he'd have celebrated his birthday the next day. I meet Nancy at the First National Bank of DeWitt, where Dad had held his accounts, to deal with estate business. After our come-to-Jesus argument the night before, neither of us wants to see the other. For this appointment with the bank president, my sister and I wear dark, tailored suits and high-heeled pumps. To the young woman greeting us at the reception desk, we surely must look like eccentric dowagers, older even than her mother. She speaks in the way of many young women in the South, declarative sentences ending in question marks like birch strips peeling from the tree. "The officer we need to see," she says, "is
with a customer."
She motions for us to sit.
"I'm sorry, Miss Nancy, Miss Joe, it'll be just a few minutes."
I glance at my sister. She's crossed her legs, swinging the left one quickly, repeatedly. We have an appointment. Our father was respected here, serving on the bank's board. Furthermore, we see nary a customer in the banker's open office. "What's this all about?" I say, looking straight ahead.
"I'm sure I don't know," Nancy retorts. "Probably comeuppance."
"For what?"
"It's a bank," she shrugs. "Who knows?"
After seeing the bank officer, Nancy and I meet with the estate's attorney. We discuss the fate of Gallery G. I want to close it. It's hemorrhaging estate money. Nancy wants to keep it open. There is a vitriolic argument.
"Don't do this, girls," the attorney admonishes. "Your mother and father, I knew them both, wouldn't have wanted this."
"Girls? I'm 59. Nancy is 49. The word lingers in the air, a symbol of the way things stack up in small southern towns. If an argument between two heirs, both mature women, can be reduced to a catfight between girls, problems with the estate can be marginalized.